You're listening to the Ruhi Sleep, Sleep in Society podcast, recorded in Kingston, Ontario, Canada.
And welcome back, everybody, to Sleep in Society podcast. I'm Mike.
I'm Andrew.
And I'm Ruhi.
Thank you so much for joining us. Last week, we kind of heard a little bit from Ruhi about the process that has happened over the past almost 10 years into your case study.
Going into the 10th year of your case study.
Mm-hmm. And so now we're going to kind of reset specifically back to your manuscript,
yes,
which we left for a bit, but have always really related to. Everything relates back to that manuscript anyway. Mm-hmm. But we're going to jump back into it and talk
everything
about
comes from the manuscript.
Well, that, and that's kind of the interesting jumping off point we had with this podcast. Was the first couple episodes was really describing that manuscript and talking about it, and then everything from here has
mm-hmm.
speared off into the different directions that yeah. manuscript goes into. And today we're going to talk about self-regulation and specifically how that relates to sleep and within your case study.
Mm-hmm.
But the process as well, the process of self-regulation and what that process is like and how that works for not only you, but in how this case study, there's actually some things you describe in there about exercise and eating and when it happened and time frames that I want to get into eventually. But I want to kick things off by first describing for people who might not know, or just so we're on the same page
mm-hmm.
in the language we're using, what is this idea of self-regulation?
Self-regulation, particularly for me, is the idea of regulating one's behavior for the betterment of oneself and one's well-being, and to be able to control the variables that you have control over.
Okay.
Because there are lots of things in terms of shift work that I do not have control over, and that especially relates to sleep.
Can you give examples of variables that you do have control over?
Yes. When I eat mm-hmm. and what I eat mm-hmm. And exercise, the type of exercise I do, mm-hmm. the timing of exercise, and being able to incorporate other things that are known factors for one's physical and mental well-being. That includes meditating and that includes fasting for, prolonged periods of time. And all of those things are the factors that I, and developed over prolonged periods of time, by the way. This is
not
an overnight.
Yeah. Okay.
No, I didn't wake up one morning and decide.
and decide,
this is my pathway. And this is where, I think we touched upon that at the very beginning of when we started talking about the manuscript, where you realized that I realized how my systems were so askewed. And when you're, I think, in that kind of darkness, it's not a clear pathway at all.
Yeah.
I think it develops over time. And then what I started looking at was things that I, what is it, things that I can control.
Yeah.
And what I can control is my physical well-being.
Yeah.
That, and by physical well-being, I mean how, in terms of exercise, how I'm able to exercise, how much I'm able to exercise, the timing of exercise, which is all is based upon the current scientific literature that was coming out. So all these programs and experiments that I designed were based upon the scientific literature that was coming out at that particular
yeah.
point in time, and, when to eat and how much to eat and all of those things. Those are the variables that I had control over.
Yeah.
What I didn't have control over was one variable, was my sleep.
Right.
Sleep was the only one of the variables. And, other variables related to sleep, which is your mood and levels of stress and all of those things, you don't really have control over those things.
Yeah.
How you react to those things
sure.
is something you have
control yeah.
over. But if you're sleep deprived, and we've talked about this over and over again, if there's sleep deprivation and your rhythms are altered, then no, how are you going to see the world? How are you going
yeah.
to relate to the world
yeah.
is going to be impacted. And normally, in a sleep-deprived situation, it is negative. And that is going to affect how you're
yeah.
going to react to everything else around you as well.
So because it's not an overnight fix, because it took time, how much trial
and multiple failures.
Okay,
let's not forget,
is the trial and error like that must have gone into this. I mean, let's talk about that. I mean, I think it's a good thing to talk about those failures is how difficult was it to find what was going to work for you for self-regulation? Because even though you're right, we have control over those things you listed, but there's always that temptation to eat too much, to drink too much, to not, to literally just go home and crawl into bed and do nothing. So what did you do to when those failures happened and those changes? Like, describe that process for us.
Well, the first process I would like to go before I go into the failures is the idea of how I started the regulatory process itself was making, becoming aware of my own rhythms and or the lack thereof of my rhythms. I'm coming to an understanding, I am very arrhythmic in everything. And then how do I translate, like how does one translate the arrhythmia that you have in terms of shift work that it creates within your biology, how you're able to mitigate the negative consequences. And again, I will use that word slow violence because that's how I see it. Yeah. How do you take those acts and develop a process of regulation which can somewhat mitigate the negative consequences of the slow violence of shift work. And the first thing was for me to do was actually start studying my rhythms and coming to an understanding of my rhythms and then coming to understanding of what makes me feel good and then starting to look into that and then regulating myself accordingly.
So it's interesting that you brought up again, like we've talked about in the last couple episodes, a little theme of that taking that step back to look at oneself is a process that seems very important to begin this, which is hard for a lot
and
of people.
A long process again.
Okay, yeah. And talk about that as well. So it's a long process. So I'm sure there's failures and trials and errors with reflecting upon oneself as well.
Mm-hmm. And I think failures and stuff is more retrospective. Mm. You're not realizing that you're failing while you're in middle of it.
Interesting. Yeah, that's interesting.
You know, because you're feeling really good about the self-regulatory process. Yes, you're like, oh, look how disciplined I am.
Yeah, yeah.
Look how I can really push my physical limits and able to regulate what I eat and not just regulate myself, regulate my family at the same time as to what they eat and what time you eat and all of those things. And I think it was fantastic when I was doing it. And the motivator was, oh, I'm trying to do something for myself and trying to figure out a system that's helpful to me and might be helpful to others in the long process, right? That's what's motivating you.
Yeah.
And the number one factor that I look at it was being a mother. I just really, Mike and Andrew, my main thing was being a better parent. Like I wanted to be a better at it, that I did not want to be in a state of negativity. I wanted a place and space for my children to have a wonderful environment to exist in, a positive environment to exist in. And that means that I had to regulate when I timed my exercise and intensity of my exercise or what time I ate and what I eat and what I didn't eat, then that was the price that I was willing to pay for that. And then it wasn't supposed, I didn't think of it as a case study. It just became a case study as it processed.
It started
as just a process of seeing, oh, wait, what is within my control and what isn't within my control?
Yeah.
And what is within my control? How can I fine tune it to have better control over things that I had no control over?
It's very interesting that this all stemmed from not the idea of a case study, but it grew out of it, which I don't know, maybe that's why I find all of this so powerful, is it started from a place of self-improvement, but also for others, and then sort of grew into, oh, this is a case study, this becomes a thing, as opposed to looking at something as, I want to do this case study for my academic thing, or I want money, or this. It didn't come from any of those places.
No, it wasn't even academic. So I don't think I ever thought of it as, I think it became academic retrospectively.
Yeah,
I think it became academic when somebody else wanted me to be their case study.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, you should be our case study. It's like, no, I think I should be my own case study. And I think that's where it became more academic. And that's where it also came where I was like, okay, now I'm in the middle of this process of regulating. To further fine-tune that, let's see what science has to offer in this particular area in terms of shift work and sustainability. Let's see where the scientists are at and then take that knowledge and then create it into a full-blown experiment. And that's what happened. It became a full-blown experiment, which I was hoping was going to be successful forever and ever and ever.
That was the hope.
That was one's hope. One's hope is that high-intensity interval training and diet, you know, done at a regulated timing, a regulated time, would hopefully improve one's well-being and susceptibility to the acts of slow violence that shift work imposes. No, that was not the case. And that's also an interesting finding. And I think that's actually one of the greatest findings of this particular study.
How often were you doing these trainings at your peak?
Oh, at the peak, you mean prior to when the systems collapsed?
Yeah,
the peak was about 6 days a week, and sometimes it was around 2 to 3 hours of high-intensity training because I started also doing martial arts. Because I also wanted somebody else to be recording my activities as well, not just me. So sort of like a third-party observer who was independent of me. And physically, I have to say, I was amazingly fit. I was pretty great before I realized that one cannot be a full-time shift worker, a full-time parent, and a full-time athlete. Those things.
It's hard to do all three of those.
All three of those things without having a full-on infrastructure to support you, because that's what it came down to. It was a full-time activity. I was a full-time athlete and very regulated. And when I trained at night and when I trained on my off days.
So that kind of covers the physical training aspect. What were the other areas of self-regulation and what, where did things grow from there? Can you give us examples of what other things you were doing and maybe how it shifted?
Yeah, I think first thing, when you start exercising at that level, the first thing that's going to come is your diet. You're going to start paying attention to what you're eating because you want to maximize your gains. And I don't mean just by muscle gains, but everything about it. You want it to, you want the best possible results. And if you're doing, if you're an athlete, you know how important diet is to that. And I think that's also, it started with diet control as well. I mean, what I ate, when I ate, how much I ate, all of that became part and parcel of where I eliminated sugar completely from my diet. I mean, only time I would have dessert was special occasions where it was somebody's birthday. I completely eliminated alcohol from my diet. Not that I drank like that much, just to be very clear about this. It's not, but even like a single sip of, you know, wine or beer or even champagne, I completely eliminated that part. Those were the variables that I could have control over. So I started controlling them, and I started controlling them further and further and fine-tuned them further and further as to when I ate and when I trained and how much I trained and, you know, the point where my high-intensity training would be up time to the point of, like, wanting to throw up because that was the only measure I had of, like, being able to, this is where I have pushed myself to my maximal abilities. Because it wasn't like somebody was measuring my, you know, oxygen.
It's interesting.
Maximal oxygen.
Talking about that kind of the breaking points, the, like, what is the limits? Did you ever feel at other points, like, were there smaller, not just like system shutdowns, but were there smaller points where you felt, okay, I may have reached a breaking point here or a point where I'm starting to realize in some of my self-regulatory, I'm really interested in these shifts making, and you're talking about always changing and growing, and what were the tip-off points? Like, what made you go, I'm going to try something new here?
Oh, I think it's mostly retrospective. Okay. When you're in the middle of it, you're not. You're just going.
Oh, so most of it
After systems collapse. I mean, there are always signs.
Yeah.
There are signs where you are injured and yet you're still pushing yourself. It's not a good thing to be doing. You know, when you're injured, you should be pushing back. But my I was so afraid that if I stopped pushing myself, I was going to be in that room again.
Yeah.
When I first arrived, when it stopped, the case study itself started was
yes.
that particular room
yeah.
that I go back to, and I did not want to go back to that room
yeah.
having that kind of emotional experience.
Yeah,
that always stays.
At the beginning of the process. And yeah,
that stays with me all the time.
Yeah.
That stays with me even now. And I think that's a very interesting thing. And it still affects me deeply. And I think it's good because it's
sure.
process. It's part and process of my journey. I think it's important that it does. Because I didn't want to go back to that particular headspace in that particular room. So I did. I would push myself even when I was injured. And which is not that's not conducive because sooner or later those injuries are going to catch up to you where you're not going to be able to perform at all. And also the fatigue that comes
yeah.
from constantly regulating and not giving yourself a break. Like my vacations would end up being around training.
Yeah, which, yeah.
See,
yeah,
right? The
rough,
vacation
yeah.
wasn't like, oh, take your time off from everything and just relax. It was
yeah.
more like, oh, I need to improve on a certain form. And I need to dedicate the next 2 weeks to this particular thing. And instead of taking a break from it, which, again, coming from, you know, having dedicated my 20s to systems theory, one would think
yeah.
that would be the first thing that would pop into my head.
Yeah.
But did it? No, it did
it's
not.
It's interesting that
it
still
did
doesn't.
Not.
It didn't. And
no.
that's, again, I think a thing that a lot of people can relate to is even people who don't have that same training or sense of mind that you did at that time, they would still think the same thing. I mean, people can get very much enthralled in exercise in the same way that you can get enthralled in things that we would call addiction.
Mm-hmm.
But
oh, absolutely.
You know, it's 100% addictive.
Oh,
right?
Absolutely.
You know,
it is.
Yes, because it's releasing natural things doesn't mean you can't get hooked on that.
No, for sure.
I think people can relate to that.
Mm-hmm. And pushing yourself to extreme limits,
yeah.
which I was pushing myself to extreme limits because I couldn't just jog and I couldn't just do power yoga because that was not effective. I tried and it was not effective way for me. Only thing that was effective for me was high intensity interval training.
Yeah.
How do you know you've reached your maximal capacity? You reach your maximal capacity when you feel like, oh, I'm about to throw up now. I should push myself back.
Right.
And then you start looking at, and then you're recording everything every day. Every day you're recording everything you're doing,
yeah.
you know, day after day, year after year. And that's a lot to be doing as well, which later I came to the process thinking, wait, like, you don't need to know everything about you. Just get your systems organized and then start.
How long did it take you to get to that point?
5 years.
Wow.
Yeah, 5 years.
Like after.
Yeah. 5 years, up until 5 years I was recording. There were gaps where I would be like, nope, can't do this today. I can't write everything about myself today. I just need
yeah.
to. You could start seeing those gaps after about first 3.5 years where the high intensity training, that kind of regular high intensity training 6 times. Was no longer effective, actually was detrimental to my well-being.
Mm.
After that, I started noticing also the gaps in terms of my not wanting to write in my journal all the time.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
yeah.
But like reflecting. So that process also developed over time where it became more and more reflective. Like this week, for example, this is what I felt like. I wish I could read from one of my journals, but I didn't bring back because that changed over time.
That might
too.
Be something that we can do though,
yeah I think that would
be
good
would
be
interesting
yeah.
to see kind of looking back on
looking back
well.
From
yeah.
where because
yeah.
it started with just timing of exercise how long it took me and
yeah.
then it developed into oh I need to note everything about where I am with my mood my sleep my well you know overall state of mind.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And productivity, again.
Yeah, and what kind of comes back to that, right, is trying to improve things like productivity and the way you feel. And, mm-hmm. and like you said, the having that constant, not knowing you don't want to end up in that room again
yeah.
as a motivator to try to move you forward. Of course, you things at time might be you're going pretty hard at it because you have that motivator. But again, I repeat myself in this case where I always say I really like those change moments. Mm-hmm. I think it's very interesting where you go, okay, after this 5-year period, now looking back on it, here are things I need to change.
Mm-hmm.
Here are things I need to.
I think it was first 3.5 years, and then I changed, and yeah. then another 5 years, and then changed. But then, you know, we reflected on it in our last episode where we were like, okay, I'm becoming better at this. I'm becoming better at being able to read
yeah.
and say when to step away.
Yeah.
Step away from yeah. this, and because this is what it's doing.
But it's a good lesson to people that it still takes time.
I think it's a constant process.
Yeah.
It's a constant process.
Yeah.
There's still some things that I push myself. Like I just push and I go, yeah. oh, wait a minute.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's very interesting.
Not good.
Yeah. Just to kind of, I guess, just as something to end on, I'm interested to note how you've always been very clear bringing up what works for you. Do you have any thoughts in terms of others who might want to begin a process of self-regulation of at least a beginning point? Was it just diet, exercise, those areas? Like, what other areas can people start to look at of what can we control versus what we can't?
I think each human is different.
Yeah.
There's no one model that fits all. I say that, like, I repeat this thing over and over again. There yeah. is no one model. What works for me is not necessarily what's going to work for you, Mike or Andrew.
It's important for people to know that, though.
And I think it's also yeah. to understand where it's with awareness,
yeah.
becoming self-aware of what variables you have control over and what variables you do not have control over, and then developing those systems from there. You know, that gives us awareness, not just about ourselves, but it gives us awareness of our systems around mm-hmm. us, which is something that would be that I've been delving deeper and deeper into. The systems that perpetuate these things, like,
yes.
you know, mm-hmm. where I had to take, I knew at one point that full-time shift work was not my cup of tea. It was not going to be conducive, mm-hmm. that I could not be physically keep my physical abilities, like in terms of like exercise and in terms of diet and all of that, and have full-time shift work. That something to both of those things to work, I had to step away from my full-time shift work and therefore step away from my benefits as well while trying to maintain my physical and mental yeah. well-being.
Yeah.
So I think more you understand about yourself.
Yeah.
Oh, it is a big deal. It has its impact. It has economic impact, right?
Yeah.
It has impact on your economics and when you no longer have
yeah.
Sick days and paid sick days or paid vacations or benefits. That was actually an excruciating decision to make because I knew that I was taking on more expenses. But what was, you know, it was to be able to have a better life, to be a better parent, to be a more engaged
yeah.
person, engaged member of my community, which in the end, that is what it's about for me,
yeah.
is to be able to participate in them in life. That's what life is to me.
Yeah.
It could be different meaning for everybody else.
And I think that's an important point to keep bringing up, mm-hmm. is that everyone's different and there isn't a model.
Absolutely.
It's one. But we do have some systems that we all can probably relate to that are out there that we can't control, but we have to find what's going to motivate us and work for us.
And have an understanding. Like, we need to change those systems as well,
yeah.
right? Like, I think that's a very important point to bring up, that it's not just you carrying yourself, because this is what I learned. That was me carrying myself. And that you need actual systems of support around you, like,
yeah.
especially if you're a shift worker. Those systems of support need to be placed in order for you to be able to carry your duties as a worker and to be able to have a life,
yeah.
You know, as an individual, as a human, to keep your humanity intact.
It's so fascinating, the full circle conversation of this, because we come back to shift work, but it also very much relates to the school systems that we were talking about with teens. It's all about having better support systems to help us be better.
It's all related. It's all related. So when we are going about these different conversations, they are all related.
And I think we should end right there with the they're all related, because I think it's a very strong message, and I hope that people do take away from that at least away from this, is that yes, we are all different. There's no model, and we should be treated in that way, but we can relate to each other in this sense because of how much things relate to each other.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so fascinating to have these conversations, and without planning it, we always end back. It's almost like we always come full circle to a concept or an idea that we've already discussed and talked about, and see that connection very clearly.
That's what we are here to do.
Yeah,
make those connections.
Thank you, everyone, once again for listening, and we will see you next week, or will you hear from us next week? I always say see, but it's not television.
No,
but like you'll hear us.
Yeah, you'll hear us.
You can visualize us, though.
Podcast,
visualize what you think we look like.
Exactly. Imagination.
Use your imagination. Yes. Have a great day, everyone. Yeah.